sahanao bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadishamastavavidvishavahai om shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
In his commentary on this verse, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur clarifies the distinction between the terms avyakta, pradhan, and prakriti. To better appreciate this purport, it should first be noted that Shankya philosophy posits that the whole universe is evolved from the three gunas. The state in which they are in their natural equilibrium is called prakriti. And when their balance is disturbed, they say to be in vikriti, the heterogeneous state. The three gunas are said by the non-theistic Shankya philosophers to be the ultimate cause of all creation. Right? So in other words, goodness, passion, ignorance are there within the pradhan, but in their perfect balance. So when they get out of balance, that's when you have the creation. And so if you put it back into perfect balance again, it goes back into pradhan. Right? So that's their idea. Now how it works that you yourself get it to balance and then there's that just that little bit of pradhan for you to merge back into, or how it works. Because otherwise then you have the problem, one person becomes realized but everybody else isn't, so then how will it go back to that perfectly balanced state? Or you're the only one and everybody else is actually just the modes of nature, so you're the only living entity that's involved. So, it starts to become weird.
Does prakriti imply pradhan and vikriti imply mahatpatra? Because it says...
It means it's all coming out into the different situations. But the whole point is you have avyakta, pradhan, and prakriti. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's what they're seems to be discussing. How much they understand of all these other aspects, I don't know. But see, is that at this point is where all these philosophies have their problems. Right? Up to this point, they do all right. Right? Because they're working on the mechanics of how the universe works that's given in the Shastra. So it's not actually different. The difficulty is because their end is different. They don't have a complete understanding of Brahman. So up to this point, or Paramatma. So up to this point, it works fairly well in all these six Vedic philosophies. But once you get up to this point, then the problem comes is that because they're not including the personality of Godhead, therefore, and his it's his expansion, localized expansion of Paramatma, his impersonal feature is Brahman, then they can't actually understand the reality of what's going on. What is the jiva? What is the material nature? How it's all functioning? Yes.
So, to what point they are right?
Generally, you see most everybody, from what I can see, is correct up to the point of the Mahatattva. Right? After that, that's where it falls apart.
So, can we say that they are correct regarding the secondary creation, and they have no clue?
The secondary creation and even aspects of the primary. You know, where you have the primary creation, but what goes beyond behind the primary? That's where they don't see the Lord. They don't see his desire. They don't include all these aspects. So because of that, then there's a problem. But if they accept Mahavishnu or accept Vishnu, then it has to be something material, because it'll go back to pradhan or back to nothingness. you know, the jivas therefore has to be an illusion because he doesn't exist, or if he does exist, it's just part of the pradhan scene. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is they can't see beyond this point. So whatever the material mind can conceive of, and intelligence, that much they can see. Right? But understanding the Lord, and understanding the Lord in His three features, that's where it falls apart, because only through devotion can you understand that. So because they can't understand actually the Lord's position in this whole process, that's where it falls apart. Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why we say up to the point of liberation, then what we say and what other, you know, the impersonal Vedantists say is the same. It's just that when you get to that point, then what's going to happen, that's where there's a difference. But otherwise, the mechanics of the universe, how it functions, how the soul gets conditioned, how it gets liberated, that's all going to be the same thing. It's just which aspect they focus on. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. This verse gives the characteristics of Prakriti, the aggregate of the three gunas is called avyaktam, pradhanam and prakriti. It is called avyakta, the invisible, because it has an invisible state, though it still possesses particularity due to the balance of the three gunas. Okay. It is called pradhan, the chief, because manifesting variety, it is the best among all partial forms which are its effects, being the shelter of particular elements like Mahatattva. It is called Prakriti, original form, because it is the cause of the other causes and effects, Sarasat, such as Mahatattva, being the very Sarup Atma of what follows. It is eternal, since it remains as the final cause, even after universal destruction. Right. So after universal destruction, Praman still exists. I mean, Pradhan still exists. Or there's another meaning. What is indestructible, called Pradhan, because it is superior, is also called Prakriti. Its indescribable nature is given. Though consisting of three gunas, it is invisible. It becomes visible with gunas. Though it is composed of cause, asat, and effect, sat, it is eternal. Though it is seen as temporary, things such as earth and has variety such as Mahatattva, it is also without variety when in the condition of balanced gunas. What possesses variety as substance becomes invisible, without variety in another form. So the basic thing is that the three gunas, when they're in balance, then you don't see, because we're functioning under the modes of nature. So there's a particular balance. That's what creates the 8,400,000 species and all the situations that they're in. It's a particular combination of the modes. So when the modes are just balanced, then you have this aspect of the unseen. Does that make sense? The avyakta aspect. So whether that's pradhan, whether that's avyakta. So the point is that it's just bringing out different aspects of the same thing. So pradhan is what's going to be what causes avyakta the mahatattva. Right? Those are going to come from there. Of course, now why all this is happening? Because of the Lord's glance. But if you're just looking at the mechanics, they all come from pradhan. So pradhan is the basis of them. And that balance of the modes means just everything is there. So they exist. Goodness, passion, ignorance exist, but they're not interacting. Therefore, it is unseen. So only when they interact, then you can see something. Because in the primary creation, you're going to get, let's say, the form of an elephant. The principle of the elephant. That means there has to be a combination of particular modes to get that. Right? So already in that aspect of that primary creation, Mahatattva, you already see the modes of nature functioning. Does that make sense? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can we say that Mahatattva is manifest and unmanifest, but it exists eternally?
Mahatattva. No, Mahatattva, that will go back and forth. That'll manifest and non-manifest. Pradhan, that will always be eternal. Or Prakriti, that will be eternal. That's why it's the cause and effect. Right? So, the effect will be there, the Mahatattva, and then when the Lord breathes back in, then the Mahatattva is not there anymore. In the way of this manifestation, it means if you take the overall where Mahavishnu is staying, you call that Mahatattva. Right? But the particular creation is only happening when he breathes out. Then when he breathes in, it disappears, so you're just left with Pradhan. Right? But there's some aspect that aspect of the primary creation appears to remain. Otherwise, how would you have those that emerged in Brahman and all those things like that? So there must be some asset. So it may be that the Mahatattva aspect is always there. But we just give a system how it goes. Then the universe is manifest in that. So then Mahavishnu, because that primary creation is the platform Mahavishnu, since he's always there, then in that way you could say it exists. But how much of it is existing, that hasn't been stated. Right? But the full manifestation is there, then when that glance and everything is happening, then you see the full manifestation. But only once the universes are there, then he expands as Garbhadakshay and Girudakshay and enter the universe.
So. The basic state is Pradhan, whereas Avyakta and Prakriti are the two characteristics of Pradhan.
It would be good if you spoke a little louder.
Pradhan is the basic state, whereas Avyakta and Prakriti are the characteristics of Pradhan. That's why...
You could say, but you also have the aspect of Avyakta, which means which is invisible. So you're not seeing anything with Pradhan either. So in one sense, you could refer to it as Avyakta. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's that state after that where the gunas are there, but in their balance. Mm-hmm. So it's just basically what you're looking at is, depending upon what you say, then you're bringing out that aspect. You know, just like, let's say, we have a teenage girl, okay? And she's getting engaged, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you call her... Now, is there any problem in calling her a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any problem in calling her a girl?
Yes.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's a teenager, she's not trained, she's... Yes, so there, that's what we're dealing with. Okay, you get it?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of what aspect you're looking at. You call it Pradhan, Prakriti, or Vyakta. Yeah, because Mahatattva, that's been distinguished as elements, you know, that are coming after. So then the Mahatattva, then the particular universes, then within each universe, and all that. So Prakriti, Pradhan, and Avyaktam, that basically they're one thing, depending upon which characteristic you're bringing out.
Can you please explain that? Usually Mahatattva is called or is addressed as Prakriti. Not as Pradhan, not Pradhan is Prakriti. Your Chakravarti Thakur says that Pradhan is also referred as Prakriti. Usually people refer
because,
to Mahatattva as Prakriti.
Because it's all Prakriti, it's all coming from Pradhan.
Okay.
You understand? It's just like, let's say you have a particular lady, okay? And she has a house. And she has a very particular personality, a very particular taste in how she does things. Right? How she organizes the house, colors she likes, and this and that. So when you walk into the house, even though you don't see her, you can appreciate that this is that woman. You understand? So you have to be able to accept these onenesses and differences. Does that make sense? So all it is you're bringing out the different... So when the three modes are together in a balanced form, it's called avyaktam, pradhan and prakriti, right? So that in these stages you call it by that because they're balanced. Mahatattva, that means then now they're having effects. There's particular... How you say elements that are being established there. says, that makes sense. So if you want to bring out, what is it here? Called Prakriti because it is the cause of other causes and effects, sadasat, such as the Mahatattva, being the very surup of what follows, right? So Prakriti is the form of which everything else is going to happen. You understand? So then you call it Prakriti. You call it avyakta because it's an invisible state. There's still particularity, but because of the three modes, you don't see the manifestation of it. Though we understand from the Shastras that all those things are there in their primary state. Right? But they're not visible. They're only visible once Brahma creates it. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Why are we attributing the cause to the effect and then to the effect? Is it because the cause?
Because the effect, the question. Yeah, everybody likes to talk quietly. Okay. The question is here we have in the second paragraph, cause and effect, and the cause is asat and effect is sat. Because then you see it, and then asat means it's unseen. Like that. At the same time as what's the cause of something? Is it real? You have a particular body. This body exists, so you could say it's sat. What's the cause of this body? Yeah, but why would this particular material body manifest? And is those desires real? That's asat. Yeah. She can't even hear you, and she's right next to you. The form of what follows. It's the form of what's going to follow, means all the whole creative process. Right? But what is the cause of that process? That's Krishna.
What here
means the Atma means the soul of the whole thing. Means the whole Prakriti is the whole soul of what's going on. Means that we see everything here, that's because it's taking on the nature of Prakriti. So Prakriti is the cause of all this. Prakriti has the potential to manifest all this. So it's actually, it is the soul of all this. You know what I'm saying? But Krishna is the soul of the soul, right? Just like for us, then the super soul is within the soul. So he's also within the universe. So within the universe, within the Mahatattva, over all the material manifestation, then Garbhadaksha Vishnu is the Atma. Right? Within the universe, Garbhadaksha, within the living entity, the Kiradaksha. You understand? And then within, all the manifestations, then he is also there. But the point is Pradhan that is able to take on these forms. Otherwise, how do you get form and activities? Right? So that's energy is doing that. That makes sense. Yeah. So that's it. Means we have to understand that these words, they have so many different ways they can be used. That's what the Vedanta Sutra is dealing with, is words that are generally always used in one way, but then sometimes some words are used in different ways. So you have to know when it switches the context to know what it means. Yeah.
In the third canto, it says that when all these principles, the Mahatattva, when it was unaroused, right? So the Lord entered inside it, then along with work, time, and then he roused it into activity.
Right.
And then when he did arose, I mean that the cosmic being arose, right? Which they call Virati.
Yes.
So it says that he divided this universe into 14 departments and then right. Light down on the water.
Right.
And then all the demigods entered in and then So I have a hard time picturing Maharaj. What is the difference between did Garbhodaksha Vishnu and Virat, or is Virat a whole different thing?
Virat is how all the Lord's energies will manifest as the various positions. Right? In other words, you can't have something without the concept. Just like an artist, they can paint a picture based on an original concept. Right? Does that make sense? So, the elements that are here in this world, they can function according to that original concept. They can't do something outside of that. You understand? So what we see here, we deal with the reality and the mechanics of it, but that those mechanics have an origin. Right? So there's a science behind everything. So the dog, how it's behaving, right? The doghood. But it's based on the dogness, the original principle of dog. You understand?
So, Virat is the prototype for...
Yes, it's the prototype for everything. Means the Virat is that aspect, but it has... But Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Kiradakshaya Vishnu are both... It's an expansion of them both. Because in the principles of what's there, that is going to be Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. What activities go on, right? And that, and what should go on, that's Kiradakshaya Vishnu. You know, the results and everything of that. So both of them are there. So the attractive element of it, that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Like why you're attracted to something. The goal that you want from it, that's Kiradakshaya Vishnu. Right? Because Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is Prajumna, and Kiradakshaya Vishnu is Anirudha. Right? So you're attracted to something because a goal you can get. So that attraction is Prajumna. That goal that you want is Anirudha. Right? Then you have what you're dealing with. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So you can also take this in the other way, is that the you know, where you have cause and effect, whereas you have it the other way. The cause is the living entity, and the effect is that manifestation of material energy. That's not real. Why? It means it exists, but it's not real in that they're mistaking it to be something that it isn't. That's why it's Maya. Right, so it's actually only the Lord, His energy, and the living entities exist. Everything else technically doesn't exist. It's there, but what we think it is and what it can give you is not there. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say I make a hologram of a bucket of halava. Right? But can you do anything with it? Does it give you any benefit? So that's the whole thing. So whatever is here won't give benefit to the soul. Body, this, other things, then they can get some benefit. But the technical point is that combination of atoms doesn't actually need a benefit because they're going to carry on as the atoms anyway. You want them in that particular form? Yes, then you need to hold it together. But otherwise, whatever elements of earth, water, fire, and ether that the body's made out of, those elements are going to be there. So after the body's gone, those elements still remain. You know what I'm saying? So in that way, it's an illusion. Right? But in here, it's giving us that the whole cause behind it is the illusion is the modes of nature. Is that we're thinking that Maya is what's behind. Then we have what we, you know, what we say is tangible, but it's based on Maya. That's why it's not real.
We are talking about the pradana.
Yes.
Sense.
Yes. Right. So it becomes visible when the gunas, when you the gunas work, act, then you manifest. You see. When they're not acting, then you have this pradhan prakriti and avyakta. So. Means don't get quieter as you talk.
Yeah, when we talk about Mahamaya and Yoga Maya,
Manomaya.
Mahamaya.
Or Mahamaya.
We're speaking about one person too often.
Right.
And the Yoga Maya's energies are very conscious, the spiritual and material energies are unconscious because they're material. And in this context also, like the mold and energy, they're unconscious, but the Prakriti, she's very much personality. So
what's the problem? What's the doubt?
The doubt is...
Or what's the confusion?
If
you have a person, do you have a shadow? Okay? Means you have Krishna. Right? Then you have a person. Right? Then will you have a shadow? So the shadow, that's Maya. The person is Yoga Maya. So it's the same person, it's just whether, because it means you don't want to be dealt with badly so they can deal with your shadow badly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You heard something?
We said that Pradhan is invisible, and when the Pradhan transforms into Mahatattva, then obviously now Pradhan is not existing at all. What exists is only Mahat.
No, it's all there. Means, what is it based on? It's the cause, so it still exists. It's not in that form, but it's still the same thing. That's why one has to understand it's all one thing.
It's
just a matter of what's the position that's there.
Invisible.
Yeah. Okay. Because wherever there's going to be the internal potency, there's going to be external.
Yes.
It's just a matter of here it's manifest. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's manifest. And so then we can see, we can appreciate. Or not appreciate, as well as it goes. But the point is that you can't say it's all of it's all right here. It's just a matter of what is necessary is that's all, because you only need this much space. So 1/4 is given to the Mahatattva. 3/4 is given to the spiritual planets.
Can I ask not related question?
A non-related question.
Related to Krishna.
Related. See, there's this word "or" here, so I was thinking so.
An issue question.
An issue question. I see.
Bhaktivinoda Kaur says that the three sources of living entities.
Three sources of living entities.
Balaram, Sankarsan, I think, and Mahavishnu. Can you elaborate on that? And if that's
good. The difficulty comes in this point is that we're trying to understand it through, you know, our material cognitive facilities based on time and space. Right. Now, let us say for the Cowherd Boys, right? The person standing next to Krishna that's white is known as? Okay. Now, the Pralambasura, right? Who is he actually dealing with? Right? Because who kills the demons? Means Sankarshan. Just like Krishna, he kills the demons as Vasudeva, not as Braja Krishna. So in the same way, Balaram doesn't kill the demons as Balaram, he kills them as Sankarshan.
Yeah,
so you're starting to get the idea?
Just it was a question that was asked to me. So I just explained it mechanistically, but it was not very satisfying.
Well, because you can't satisfy the material intelligence.
So the proper answer would be?
The proper answer would be is that it's a matter of the how you are viewing. You know what I'm saying? What is your view of the Lord? So if your view of the Lord is, you know, inclined towards devotion, then you're going to see the Lord in one way. But if you don't see Him in devotion, then what? Is that right? Yeah. That's your main difference then. Point is being part of the spiritual scene, but not actually being interested in the spiritual or the devotional, then that transfers you to the position of functioning under Mahavishnu. Is that right? So that's what we're dealing with. So if you see it in that way, you go there. If you see it in another way, then you can go to Vaikuntha. In another way, then you can go to Goloka. So it's just a matter of what's the mood in which you see and feel. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It's just like... yeah. Does that make sense? Or no?
There are millions of questions that follow that.
Because the point is we're trying to nail things down to time and space. And of course, one's going to have unlimited questions because it's not a matter of time and space. It's a matter of consciousness. So that's all. Is that one is the Surup Shakti, I mean the means Haisan. In the Samvit Shakti, then the jivas are an expansion of that Samvit Shakti.
Yeah.
Why they're...
As you do.
Well, we should turn off this phone. Because yeah. Otherwise, I can't hear anybody else and then you can't hear me. So, yeah. So... Yeah. So so that's their position. They're in a neutral state. They're on the edge of the internal potency and the external potency. They're part of the internal potency, just like the Prakriti is part of the internal potency, the expansion, the shadow. But we're more directly, we're superior because of the conscious aspect. But the jiva being in that neutral state, that's what makes them jivas. Tatastha means they can work under the internal or under the external. They have to work under one because jivas are very small. Right? So then being neutral, they can either see Krishna's energy in connection with Him, then you work under the internal, or you can see His energy not connected to Him, that makes it the external. Right? So it's a matter of consciousness. It's not a matter of where you are. So you can be in the spiritual environment, right? But see things simply just see the energy, right? And not see Krishna, right? Because that's the nature of Tatastha. You can see either way. So those jivas who naturally then see this is there, that happiness is coming from outside, therefore then Krishna, and then they take shelter of Krishna, then they take association of the eternal associates and come to that platform. So they're called Nitya Siddhas. Right? Those jivas that don't, they see the energy and think that that's something nice to enjoy. Then they're, so from the spiritual realm, they're from Vaikuntha, they're looking across to the material energy, and therefore interpreting everything according to that. Does that make sense? And so then they are then put under the control of Mahavishnu. Is that what you think? So it's just a matter of what is the mood? Is it Balaram? Is it Sankarshan? Or is it Mahavishnu? Because if you has that because they're all the same person. It's just that how you deal with Krishna, that's how you reciprocate. So you deal with him in an indifferent state, then he deals with you as Mahavishnu. If you deal with him in, you know, as that how you say majesty, he reciprocates as Sankarshan. You deal with him in sweetness, he deals with Balaram. So it's a matter of us. So this whole thing, no, where did I come from? I want to know the spot. It's like, it's not going to work. You can go on unlimitedly asking basically questions that the person asking him can't understand. It's not that you can't answer these questions. It's just that the person can't understand them because they want the answer in a specific way. You know? And it's like the other day, not this week, but the week before, in the Bhagavatam class, one boy at the end asked questions. But you couldn't answer his questions because he wanted the answers in a very specific way. You couldn't just give the principle of how it works and he works it out. No, he wanted us to give the example from the story in Bhagavatam, tell the story, then show how it connects, do this whole song and dance. He didn't want just the answer. He wanted that whole thing. And if you didn't give it, he felt you weren't answering his question. Because his question actually was, could you tell a variety of stories, not even one story, many different stories, and that, and how these all connect to this particular point, and how they set, you know, give the example and illuminate the question. That was his question. But nobody says questions like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, like the other day, we had that problem. And there is that they're asking a question. What it is it's about, you know, how is it cows, that, you know, the Christian, and people aren't dealing properly with the cows and all these different things. And that's the point. But is that how it starts off? No, we start off about here and there and bad things in the world and about Auschwitz. And why didn't they just say, you know, here's the cows, it's like this, and then, you know, how do we see that? Then it's easier to answer. So in other words, they ask the question in a particular mood, but, I mean, in particular words, but the mood is something else, and the words they said hasn't necessarily represented the mood. So when you answer the words, they'll say no, because that isn't actually their question. But they haven't actually asked the question, and if you tell them that, they just get irritated. Does that make sense? You know, so that's there. But if it's a forum of mood, that's understood. Okay, husband and wife, it goes on in this case, that's standard. Because it's about mood. But when you're in a class like this, it's not about mood. It's about understanding the logical presentation. You're dealing with the mood, but the forum is the logical presentation. So it has to be according to that. So does that make sense? So you can't deal with this, because the real thing is that, well, I don't want to be something less. This is the real question. I don't want to be coming from, means if Balaram's the top, and then his expansion is Sankarshan, and then Mahasankarshan, and then after that is Karanadakshay Vishnu, then he's the third expansion. That's a lower position. So I, as a matter of prestige, do not want to be from here. I want to be from Balaram. So I'm not going to stop asking questions until you show me that I actually came from Balaram. That's the question. And so you can't answer it, because it's not there. And then it goes back to, but at the same time, it's why Balaram? Why not Krishna? Or why not Radharani? Or, you know, like this. You know, so it's just, they have their own take on this whole prestige, material prestige. That's why we say it's a material question. So you can't answer it. If they ask the question, you say it philosophically, they understand, then that didn't have the mundane element. That's just some confusion on this and that. But when it just keeps going, you know, like you said, thousands of questions come up, you're dealing with the material. Because otherwise, if you understand the principle, all your questions goes away. Now, okay, in practical application, now there's the next question. Because it should be after that. Okay, then if that's the case, then it should be, what can we do to qualify ourselves to actually move forward in our position and come to the platform of you know, a nitya siddha instead of a nitya bhava. So that's going to be according to the devotional process. How do we practice that? Then you have the vaidisara under the direction of the guru. You understand, what's the goal of that? It's prema. So therefore, then you're trying to develop that as a natural thing, so it takes on a spontaneous element. These would be the natural progression of questions. But when the questions are just things about how that's not logical by time and space, you know, and we haven't even gotten into the thing of you know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. It's the same principle as what we're dealing here with Maya, is that we're trying to see it as completely separate things, but it's one thing. It's just different aspects of one thing. Because the material energy manifests here, this is still the elements that are that make up Pradhan. It's just that it's manifest through the modes of nature. And then the modes of nature aren't acting, then you have Pradhan. Is that makes sense? So that's all. It's just a matter of the same thing. That's there. It's a matter of control. Because if you have a category and I categorize people, that means I'm in control. So that's, you know, that's the thing, is that by giving these things, then you give nice tools by which you can function, but at the same time, giving these things people can misuse. That's why the principles are the most important. Like Prabhupada, the principles are obvious. And then the detail, he words them in a nice way that it's, you can have them, you can make the minimal amount of trouble with the detail. But because of this, then, because we only see detail and not principle, we will think that Prabhupada's not giving necessarily so much information. And others give so much more because they give more detail, because, or give technicalities of the detail. But once you understand the technicality of the detail, you see that Prabhupada already explained all that in a very simple language. So that's the thing. He made it very accessible, because otherwise we're going through Vedanta Sutra now in these technical points, and this is the eighth year. And still, it's a problem, because this whole thing of the Chinta Beda Veda Tattva is seeing something inconceivably simultaneous with one and different. We're still, you know, adjusting with that. Because it's three different things, but at the same time, it's one thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the point is always a problem. Right? So then you see all of that's in what Prabhupada says. It's just that how Prabhupada gave it doesn't create all these, you know, people who think they're very intelligent, so-called scholars and, you know, like that. Because otherwise, if you have all the technical detail but don't understand this connection with the principle, is, you know, with devotional service and how to apply it, then India is full of such people, scholars and smartas and, you know, all kinds of people who are, you know, overly fanatic or underly fanatic or... Sorry?
And they're better in us in that way.
Yeah, I mean, they're way better at it. But the point is to avoid that, then Prabhupada has worded things in a certain way. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is how to... Because the point is there's a mood. If you don't understand the mood, the detail won't mean anything to you. So the mood is given. And then how much detail you can work with. Now, as you go, you'll start to see more and more detail. It's revealed. It's called revealed scriptures. Right? It's through revelation. That's how you do. You can read the same purport so many times. Like we said, when our original Bhakti Shastri study guide was made, then Atmatattva, when he's going through the Gita, read each purport six times. So, based on what he understood from reading it six times, that's what he made the thing on. And the most intelligent devotees in the movement, most qualified, they could maximum get through half of the study guide before just giving up because it didn't make sense to them, because they were only reading the purport once. Now, if they had read it six times also, then they could have continued through the whole thing. But it doesn't specifically mean that, because he was reading it six times just to get to understand it. But what he didn't catch was is that going through like that, it was more subtle and the connections were more subtle, that others couldn't see that without that. So he was taking it that this is obvious rather than putting in the connections. Right? Or the connections he did put in, then people didn't see him. They had to connect those connections. So in other words, you needed five more levels of explanation to make it accessible. You understand? So then that's why then it was redone into the context that we had, what we used in our first year. So that it was more accessible. Does that make sense?
I know the word is for like going to books and for Krishna consciousness, and they will say that you can eat mundane literature like day and night, reading and just like absorbing everything, but Bhagavatam or spiritual books, you can't just...
No. Yeah, you have to contemplate.
Yeah,
it's manana. Because the other ones, you can take one of those fat books and read it overnight. You know, I've seen devotees do it. Sorry?
Skipping happy.
No. They're just really good at reading fast. Yeah, whatever it is, but they get the whole, you know, they get whatever it is. That's how they function, because that's the point. There's no substance there, so you can do that. You read every third word. But it's not a matter that they like reading, so then they'll just spend the time. It's just something, they can't read at night, they get out of the book and just start reading through it. You know? But then the point is like you said, that there's nothing to contemplate. There's others, then you have to go through and contemplate what each thing means, how it means. Yeah. So that's the thing. Is when that's done, then you get something when you contemplate it. Yes? So does that work? It means, in other words, it's when the reason that all the acharyas say don't get involved in these questions is because how can you explain it? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. It's either it's understood or it's not. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. It's just like, okay, where do babies come from? Okay? Now, you have a 3-year-old. Okay? Good luck. Okay, a teenager, do you really have to explain? No, so that's the point. It's that you either understand it or you don't. And so if it's explained, you don't understand it, it's not the time yet. If you perform devotional service and all that, and then later on maybe it'll make sense.
That freaks people out even more.
Are you saying? Freak out happens. You know, it's just, that's the way it is. Yeah, so the point is so then what's the obstacle then? What's the real obstacle? It's just like I said, it's false ego. Because the doubt is I don't want to come from Mahavishnu. I want to come from Balaram. And why is that? Because of prestige. Prestige means false ego. False ego means freaking out. Like that. We're in the material world. 9 out of 10 don't make the mistake and aren't here. So we can't say as well, you know, it's like, yeah, most come here, so yeah, I'm just one of the boys. But no, 1 out of 10. So then that means, you know, how you say, the starting point of the conversation is we're idiots. That's why we're here. So now if we want to make that into a prestige issue, okay, we can do that. But is devotional service about prestige, or is it about trying to be? No, but I'm advanced, I'm this, I'm that, I'm, you know, no. The point is no, we're servants of Krishna. That's the whole point. Is that right? Yeah. So that's the principle behind it. No. Yeah. So that's why it's said, don't read too many books. because you get confused. You just stick to Prabhupada's books, you don't get confused. If you can read the Acharya's works and see them in context of Prabhupada's books and not get confused, then they're worth reading. That's why we're doing them together. Like that. It means we're in the main course, it's the Bhagavatam, but it has the, you know, Acharya's comments. We're seeing the connection. In the secondary course, then it's the Acharya's works, but we see it in connection with Prabhupada. So only if you can do that, then you can get benefit. But otherwise, if you see it separate, then it's going to be a problem. Does that make sense? So that's why it says don't read too many books, because if you're just going into something new and fresh and this and that, but that's like mundane literature. Because the point is Krishna's, anything about Krishna is always fresh. It's just a matter of contemplating it. If you just want to hear without contemplation, then you can say, oh, I've heard that. But if you're going to contemplate, then you can see, okay, now this has some meaning. Does that make any sense? So that's the whole point. That's where the freshness is. So you don't need to read more things. Does that make any sense? So it's like, you know, and they should be basing that point that's made there on all the other points. You know, what's the nature of the jiva and everything like that and everything there, because that's explained, it's called the Jiva Dharma. Yeah, so that's being explained in the Dasamul on the nature of the jiva. Right? So then, what about all those, and up by that time we're already probably around chapter 15. Right? So what happened to all the other chapters before that? You know, so in other words, they're just reading, they're not, and just catching points that seem different, rather than assimilating as they go, so that you're building. Okay, then what is this? The last Bhagavatam quote. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4, 20 and 21. In the unmanifest stage of material nature called Pradhan, there is no expression of words, no mind, no manifestation of the subtle elements beginning from the Mahat. Nor are there the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There is no life, air, or intelligence, nor any senses or demigods. There is no definite arrangement of planetary systems, nor are there present the different stages of consciousness, sleep, wakefulness, and deep sleep. There is no ether, water, earth, air, fire, or sun. The situation is just like that of complete sleep or a voidness. Indeed, it is indescribable, because there is nothing to describe. Right? Authorities in spiritual science explain, however, that since Pradhan is the original substance, it is the actual basis of material creation. Right? So that much will be explained. But otherwise, it's just like that. It's just a great, voidness. Like that. So that's where you can say, you know, the Buddhists end up. Okay. Yes.